It's The Record on KUOW, and I'm David Hyde with Steve Scheer. Jimmy Carter was America's 39th president. He's in Seattle today and visited us here at the station to talk about politics and his presidency and his latest book. It's his 28th. It's called A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power, about the mistreatment of women and girls around the globe. Jimmy Carter says it's the most important book he's ever written and says the abuse of women is the most serious and unaddressed human rights abuse on earth.
For instance, there's a massive amount of slavery in the world right now, much more slavery than there was during the 19th century when black people were brought out of Africa. It amounts to about $32 billion in money a year. Most of it goes to the rich countries. And in our nation, where the State Department is required by law to make a report, they report that about 800,000 people are sold across international borders every year. And 80% of those are girls being sold into sexual slavery. And the State Department also says that last year, 100,000 girls in America were sold for sexual slavery. So that's just one of the examples of it. In our country, too, we have a much lower pay for women than most countries do, about 23% less for a woman who does the same work as a man. The Fortune 500 companies, 500 of them, only have 21 that has women CEO, and they get paid about 42% less than a man. And I would say two of the most revered institutions in America are the university systems and the military. And the hotbed for sexual abuse is on the university campuses all over the nation, no exceptions. So this is a horrible example of what we do in our country. And in the military, issued a statement last year on about 2012 required by the National Congress, and they reported that 27,000 cases of sexual abuse took place in the military. Only a few more than 300 were found guilty of those rapes, which is about 1%. So it's kind of a permissive attitude to what can happen to girls and women, even in this country. And obviously, if it happens in the United States with our universities and our military, you can imagine how much worse it is in other countries.
Jimmy Carter's here. He's here in Seattle, and he's just written his 28th book. It's A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. I just want to pick up on that thread and ask you what you see as America's role then in stopping the mistreatment of women in other countries where there are different religious traditions than our own, different cultures than our own.
Well, contrary to other nations, the United States has been very reluctant to get involved in trying to address international abuse of women and girls. The United Nations, for instance, passed a convention on the elimination of discrimination against women, CEDAW, it's known as CEDAW. And the United States Senate, contrary to China and other countries, has refused to approve or to ratify this convention. So we don't take any role in trying to end the abuse of women overseas. And there's an International Violence Against Women Act, IVAWA. There again, the United States government refuses to take action on it, even though most other countries do so, to try to eliminate those abuses. So I think part of it is just the reluctance of the U.S. Senate to ratify anything that's passed by the United Nations agencies. And another part of it is a lot of the senators are very conservative. They don't want to get involved in social affairs. And so this means that we are lag way behind most other advanced countries. In fact, in pay for women, we rank 70th in the world on equal pay for women and men. And in women holding public office, we rank 78th. There are 77 other countries that are better than we are in women holding local, state, and federal offices. And this is not, of course, the most horrible abuses are overseas. We lost about 40 million people in Second World War, which is the most horrible conflict we've ever had in history, 40 million. And four times that many little girls were strangled to death by their parents at birth because they wanted a boy when the families were limited in size. And then with the advent of sonograms, the parents can tell when the fetus is still developing, and they abort the fetus if they know it's going to be female. So this is horrendous, what I call gendercide or genocide of girl babies.
Jimmy Carter's new book, his 28th, is A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power, the most important book he's ever written, he says. And I want to take you back to your own life a little bit and ask about your mother, Lillian. She was a registered nurse. You say she was really inspirational to you. What kind of a woman was your mom?
Well, I grew up in a segregated community west of Plains, Georgia, called Archery. We were the only white family. There were 55 African-American families that lived around us. And this was a time of segregation that was legal. Supreme Court ruled and Congress ruled that separate but equal was the law of the land, and it was separate, but it certainly was not equal. So my mother never paid any attention to that. And when I was growing up, I began to realize how much of a blight this was on our black neighbors who were deprived of equal chances to get an education or get a good job. Or they couldn't serve on juries. They couldn't vote in elections. And I saw that it was a blight also on white people. So when I got to be governor, in my inaugural address, I announced that the time for racial discrimination was over in Georgia. And that got me on the front cover of Time magazine a couple of weeks later. And then when I was governor, I announced that human rights would be a foundation for our foreign policy. So human rights became a very important aspect of my public life, I'd say primarily because of the example set for me by my mother.
And in the book, you do compare the mistreatment and the justifications for the mistreatment of women today to the mistreatment of African Americans in our own history. What's the connection there when it comes to citing of religious texts?
Well, there's a direct connection. We used to have very famous and distinguished theologians or Bible scholars come to Plains Baptist Church, where I was baptized. And they would quote selected verses out of it to show that God intended for whites to be superior to men, to whites. Whites would be superior to black people. And one of the things that they quoted was some examples in the Bible where it seems to condone slavery. And they said, well, at least we've graduated from slavery, but God still intends for white folks to be superior. And that was in a relatively small part of the world then. And the same thing happens nowadays with men who are in religious organizations. Say that the Bible ordains that women be inferior to men. And you can take selected verses in the Old Testament and New Testament to prove whatever you want to, because there are about 36,000 different verses, and they sometimes are not exactly the same. But I happen to be a Christian. I teach Bible lessons every Sunday in my church, about 35 times a year. And I always go back to the teachings and actions of Jesus Christ, who set a sterling example of treating women equal or superior to men in his ministry. It was an unprecedented thing at that time. And I think that Jesus' actual fair treatment of women even exceeds what we do today.
What about your father's view of women and gender when you were growing up as a kid?
Well, Daddy was pretty well, I would say, taught me to respect women that I knew, I would say, equally between white and black women. My mother nursed sometimes 20 hours a day. She would go to get off duty at night at 10 o'clock and come home and wash her uniforms and take a bath and then leave instructions for me and my sisters. And then she'd go back on duty at 2 o'clock. So she was only home 4 hours a night. So she went home during the daytime. So Daddy would employ African-American women to come in and clean our house and cook food for the children and for him. And he taught me to treat them with absolutely equal respect to the way I was taught to treat white women. And I never did feel that that they didn't deserve the treatment that I gave them.
When you were a child or growing up later years, did you see mistreatment of women firsthand that kind of was so different from what you'd been taught that it really struck you, really affected you?
Well, yeah, in a, it was kind of a halfway humorous part of first of my book. When I was 6 years old, I used to sell boiled peanuts in Plains. I would walk to town two miles down the railroad track, and I would sell my boiled peanuts to merchants and salesmen and so forth around the little town of Plains. And eventually they treated me like I was a member of the furniture. You know, they didn't pay any attention to me because I was in and out of the stores and so forth, and I didn't say much. So I heard them talking about the local whorehouses and how they, you know, frequented women there, and they would mention certain women in the town who were not faithful to their husband, or some women who would have be promiscuous sexually. And that was the first time I ever realized that there was kind of a distinction, you know, against some women. But Plains was a town that was dominated by a very wonderful hospital. We only had 600 people in Plains. We had 18 doctors. And my mother came to Plains from an adjacent town to be a registered nurse, to go through training there. So I would say that the nurses in Plains were exalted. because they were looked upon almost the same as medical doctors. They acted as midwives when the families couldn't afford an MD and so forth. So I would say that in general, you know, our town was quite respectful to women. And that's kind of the way I look upon most of the southern communities now. It's kind of a, I'd say, a reverence or exaltation of women.
And just to wrap it up, President Jimmy Carter, final question. If you had to kind of take the whole book and take it kind of one step further and just beyond even individual women and individual women's rights, what's the larger message here for humanity and why this issue is so important to you?
Well, for one thing, in the back of the book, in the last chapter in the book, I list 23 things that everyone could do, you and I and public officials and so forth, could do to end these practices. Every time I list an abuse of women and girls, I very carefully delineate some solutions to it, and I think that's the most important part of the book. But the main thing is that when a country does deprive women of an equal right to education or to opportunities in jobs or status in society or holding public office, we deprive our country potentially of about half its great resources because about half population of a country is female.
Former President Jimmy Carter talking about his new book. He's in Seattle to talk about it, too. It's called A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. You can hear more of that interview later today online at kuow.org.